All right, well, good morning, everybody. I'm very happy to be here. So actually, I was kind of shocked when Jason was introducing me. I've been visiting a lot of churches since we've been back. We're back from Japan for about 6 months. And a large portion of what we're doing is reporting back to our supporting churches in California about what's been going on. We've been meeting with new churches and speaking, so I get introduced a lot. I think this is the first time someone's gotten my last name right. So I've kind of got, it was jarring because I've gotten used to just assuming people say Robeson or Robinson, and to hear him say Robeson, I almost got up and corrected him because I forgot what my name was. But anyways, it's good to be here. All right, I'm going to run through some pictures about Japan and show you what we've been doing over there. And, oh, we're up. That's my nephew, and this is my family now, so. I think we can see them. Actually, this is, let me see. All right, I think we're good now. Okay, so let's try this again. All right, so as I said, my name is David Robeson. I got it right, okay. So my family and I, we have been working and serving in Japan since 2013. So this is a picture of my family. It's actually from last summer, so the kids have gotten a little bit bigger since then. But my wife, Tomo, she is Japanese. We actually met on a short-term missions trip, and that was on my first trip to Japan is when we met. And then we have three children. Our oldest is Titus. He's 6 years old. And then we have a girl, Felicity, who's 3 years old. And our youngest, Silas, just turned one about a month ago. So my wife is working much harder than I am right now because she's back in California with the three kids while I get to just go around here and talk to people and have fun. So she's very anxious for me to get home, and I'm looking forward to seeing her too. So we've been, again, in Japan for the last 5 years. So I'm going to go ahead and just kind of talk a little bit about the ministry that we've been involved with and how we got there. Starting off with just some pictures to give you a feel for what it looks like. Normally in California, when I show this picture, everybody gasps because they've never seen snow before. And they're like, oh, you poor, poor person going to such a difficult place to live. But I'm not feeling that vibe here. So I'm just going to skip through these. We got to build snowmen. I know. So the place where we've been living, unlike Southern California, we get four distinct seasons, which has been I really enjoy that. You know, growing up in California, we get the brown season all year, and it's nice and warm, but, you know, we don't get a lot of rain or green, so that's been kind of cool. Right now, they're just hitting into the cherry blossom season, so I'm a little bit bummed that I'm missing that this year because that's always very spectacular, but that's one of the things that Japan is famous for. We tend to be on the road a lot in our part of Japan, so we're serving up in a prefecture called Iwate. So if you guys remember in 2011, there was a massive tsunami that hit the eastern coast of Japan. There are actually three prefectures that were hit. In the southernmost was Fukushima, where the power plant was. And then in the middle was one called Miyagi, and then in the north was Iwate. So we're in the northernmost of those three prefectures. It's a very rural prefecture. It actually kind of reminds me a little bit of Washington as I've been traveling around here. Tends to be, you know, very, very green, very rural, lots of farms, maybe a little bit more mountainous than up here. Japan as a whole has lots of mountains, so the cities tend to be very spread out. So if we leave our city, we've been in the capital city of Morioka, which has about 300,000 people, but if we go outside of that, it's about at least an hour drive to get to any other city in the area, sometimes more. And so, yeah, to go visit other churches in the area, to go visit other ministries, to go down to the coast to see what's going on there, we get to drive around a lot. Our church is kind of unique in Japan. So most Japanese churches tend to skew older. So there's not a lot of young people in the churches, not a lot of families, not a lot of children. You have a lot of retired and just older generation. Our church has a lot of young families, so that was a real blessing for us. We got to get involved with the young marrieds group there. And, you know, it seemed like everybody was having kids at the same time. So there's about five young families that basically when one person got pregnant, everybody was getting pregnant. So it was really fun when the babies all came, because we'd all suddenly have, like, you know, five or six new kids wandering around. And It was not great for our kids because they always had someone to play with. So that was fun. Preschool in Japan. If you guys have ever seen pictures or been over there, sometimes you might see like kids running around with colored hats like this. That's what they do. So when they go on a field trip, all the kids will wear a hat of one color or another. And so you'll go to a famous place and you'll see like 100 kids all wearing pink hats or green hats. And that's how you can tell who's in which one. Just a little feel for the culture over there. This is something that's kind of interesting. So this is one of the cultural differences in Japan that the church has tried to find ways to sort of accommodate a little bit. So Japanese practices concerning funerals and death is very much rooted in the Buddhist ideology and religious practices. So Japan as a whole, their primary religion is a kind of a combination of Shinto, which is an indigenous Japanese belief. It's very animistic. It's this belief that there are spirits in nature. So it's kind of a form of nature worship. So if you go anywhere in Japan to visit any sort of like a national park or any sort of a famous waterfall, you will inevitably find a shrine to a local deity that is supposed to be protecting that area. And you'll find people will often go to pray there. They will bring little offerings and things like that. And that's all rooted in the Shinto tradition. Alongside that, people have adopted a kind of a form of Buddhism that they've taken and made their own. It's very distinct from most forms of Buddhism outside of Japan. But that kind of plays into the mindset that they have, whereas it's a very syncretistic society. They're very okay taking religious beliefs from other places and sort of incorporating them into their lives and practices, which obviously is a challenge when we go to present the gospel in Christianity because we worship God exclusively. We don't bring in and mix the worship of other gods alongside it. So that's a concept that for Japanese it's very difficult to accept and to understand. And it seems like almost like Christianity is kind of morally wrong in that too, the base understanding of society. That's what most Japanese will view Christianity as, having a moral fault because of its exclusivity. And so there's a lot of preconceived notions that people have about Christians, and it's very difficult to overcome that. One of them is that Christians don't honor their family or their ancestors, or they don't respect the older generation because they don't worship their ancestors like the typical Japanese would. So a main part of their understanding concerning death is that, you know, after you die, you're going to be worshipped by your descendants. And that kind of the way that takes place is typically the family will have a tomb at a Buddhist cemetery. So most cemeteries are connected to a Buddhist temple. And actually, if you look in this picture, this is at a public cemetery, so this one is not connected. But you see all those gravestones there. They're not actually headstones. They're actually tombs. So they actually open up, and inside they'll place the urns of the people who have died. So you'll have, again, normally like a family will have one of those, and then anybody who dies in the family, they'll be cremated, and then their ashes will be put inside one of these little tombs. And so when a family member goes to the tomb, they're not just going to a single person's spot, they're going to their entire family. It could be great-grandparents or even further back. And there will be rituals associated with that visit. There's like certain times that they're supposed to go and perform certain rituals, which presents two challenges for the church. One is that when a Christian dies, they don't want to be placed in the Buddhist family tomb where they'll be worshipped alongside all of their other relatives who have passed away. The other challenge is that if you refuse to visit the tombs and go to participate in those rituals, they'll view you as being very disrespectful to your past and to, again, to your relatives who have passed away. And so it's like there's an overall kind of moral base where their understanding of what's right is very much rooted in a mentality of protecting harmony within your group. And so if you kind of step outside of that, it appears to be almost an immoral act. So if you're not participating in the traditions of your ancestors or of the country at large, people will tend to view that as a very bad thing. So the Christians, one of the ways that we kind of address some of these issues is, for one, if you'll notice, the tomb that That's our pastor that he's standing by. It has a cross on it. So this is at a public cemetery. It's not associated with a Buddhist temple. And so this is our church tomb. We actually have two of them. And we offer members of our church who pass away, they have the option of having their ashes put in the church tomb instead of in their family Buddhist one so that they won't be worshipped by their family. The other thing that we do, since like there's so much about the culture that is tied into this idea of respecting those who have passed away and even to the point of caring for the tombs, where like just cleaning the family tomb is a important responsibility that, you know, the living family members have. So what our church does is once a year we have a church service at the cemetery. And it's at that service that we'll sing hymns. You know, our pastor will bring his guitar and we'll sing hymns. He'll have a short message where we talk usually about heaven and the hope of eternity that we have, the hope that we're going to see these brothers and sisters who have gone before us and passed away. We have a hope of seeing them again. And it's just a really encouraging time. And I think it's a neat testimony as well to people who come to the cemetery on those days. If they see a large group of people gathered around, that seems, you know, they understand that to be very respectful. And to see a tomb that's getting that much attention is a very positive thing. Because, you know, especially with the younger generations, they tend to be, you know, sort of falling away from those traditions. And so the younger generations often kind of look down on because they're not doing a good enough job of taking care of their family tombs and things. So when they see Christians showing that kind of, you know, respect to the ones who have come before and that care and that kind of love and concern, it's a very good testimony. And so this is, there's a lot of things within the culture where, you know, we try and find ways to really show that, you know, as Christians, we do value family. We do value, you know, our grandparents and those who died. We do value the input that they've had in our lives, but we don't worship them. We have this distinction. And so we try and find ways to sort of meet those cultural expectations and help people understand really what we're about so that there's not these distractions when it comes to the opportunity to share the gospel. This is our neighbor family. So these guys lived right next to us, so we got to know them. And they were incredibly welcoming, which they kept telling us they were weird for a weird Japanese family because they were so open to letting us come and visit their home. So our kids would often go and where'd the kids go? And they'd taken off to the neighbor's house and we're hanging out there watching TV with them and stuff. So it was really neat getting to know them. We got to have a couple of conversations about Christianity on a small level, but usually it takes a while to build up relationships to the point where people are ready to have that conversation. And a large part of that often is having people get the chance to see Christian community. And so we were able to invite them to a number of church events, and they started attending different things. And again, it's kind of true that sort of seems to be a typical path that people will take to Christ. I was at a conference a while back where a Japanese pastor was sharing, and he said that in Japanese society, generally, when it comes to presenting a truth and having people accept it, it's not, like for in the Japanese mindset, what's important is not so much what is being said, but who's saying it. And so the idea is that if you don't have that level of trust, if they don't view you as a person that they value or respect, they won't pay really any attention to what you say. And so to even have the option, or not the option, but to have the ability to share the gospel in a way that they'll understand and receive, that trust needs to be built up and shown first. And so we often, you know, have to take some time and have a little bit of patience and understanding with people as they go along that process. But we'll get into that a little bit more as we go through this. So talk a little bit about the ministry that we've been involved in over there. For the last 5 years, we've been serving, again, in Morioka, which is a city that is right in the middle of our prefecture. It's about an hour and a half from the coast. The reason that we went to this particular part of Japan is because of the tsunami. So the prefecture that we are serving in, they have, about 1.5 million people there But geographically, it's very spread out, so the populations are spread out. So just from a logistical standpoint, it's a difficult place to reach these small pockets and these small communities within it. And traditionally, that area has also been very, like rural towns in Japan tend to be very close-knit and very difficult for outsiders to find that acceptance and to really break through and build relationships there. And in part because of that, when the tsunami hit, there actually were no missionaries left serving in that entire prefecture. There was no one that had any sort of a plan or strategy to reach it. There were a few Japanese churches that had been started back in the 70s, but they were kind of working independently now and really in sort of kind of like a survival mentality where they were just trying to maintain the churches and keep the doors open. The tsunami radically changed that dynamic in two ways. First, it really, I think, was a wake-up call for those Japanese churches. It gave them a much stronger vision of the need outside of their own communities and really got them involved in outreach in a new way. So it was really exciting to see that because they really stepped up in that time of need, and our church was extremely involved in the relief efforts from the day that the tsunami hit. The other thing that happened that was very interesting was that, again, you had a prefecture that had a very small Christian awareness. There are very few Christians in this prefecture. To give kind of an idea, so we're going to be doing church planting in a city, one of the coastal cities. That city has 55,000 people. That we know of, they probably have less than 20 Christians in the city. So not like 20%, but 20 individuals that are Christians. There's one evangelical church in the city. They have an average weekly attendance of about 6. There's a few people that we know are kind of disconnected from church, and we're hoping that there's more that just we don't know about. But if there are, they're not connected to any sort of a Christian fellowship right now. And that's typical of these coastal cities. So Japan as a whole, it's about 0.5% of the population is considered evangelical Christian. So extremely low percentage. But that's largely concentrated in the larger cities. In the small cities, that tends to actually be lower. And that is, you know, those are the communities that were hit by the tsunami. So when that tsunami hit, you know, most of the people that were affected by it had never heard or considered the gospel or possibly even talked to a Christian before in their lives. But again, that changed radically because what we saw after the tsunami happened is we saw just thousands of Christians going into these cities to do relief work. And so for many of these people, the first chance that they had to meet a Christian was through that relief work. And they saw Christians coming, really sharing the love of Christ in a very practical way. And there were a lot of different groups that came in, but it was interesting because the Christians tended to gain a better reputation than any of these other groups. They felt like the other groups might have had ulterior motives. They might have been coming in for different selfish reasons. You had communist groups. They have a communist party in Japan, so the communists were coming in to do relief work. You had Buddhist groups that were coming in to do relief work. But by and large, it was the Christians that really gained people's trust and gained a better reputation. The other thing was that the Christians were more perseverant in that. You know, most of the groups, once the physical needs were met, they left. And they left, you know, about 300,000 people that were still basically homeless. They were living in these mobile home parks that the government had set up that they said, you can be here for 1 or 2 years and we'll get you a permanent place. But it's been 7 years and there's still some people that are waiting. So that started to stretch on and people felt like they'd been forgotten. They felt like everybody had just kind of moved on to the next tragedy and no one was, really cared about them anymore. But there were Christian groups that continued to go in to put on events in these temporary housing, to just, you know, do tea parties and meet with people and talk with people. And they continued going. And we still, you know, we have there's a denomination in Singapore that began sending teams there. And they've been kind of working with our church. And they committed to sending a team once a month. So once a month, they would ask all their churches for volunteers to come work in Japan. And they would send a team that would come to our church. They would help out at our church a little bit, and then we'd send them to different coastal cities. And they've been doing that for the last 7 years. They're still sending a team every single month. And so people know that. They know that this is a church group, a Christian group that's coming in. And so people have a very different understanding and perspective on Christianity than they did 7 years ago. And we were raising support here in America when that happened. So we were planning to go to Tokyo to do church planting in Tokyo. And when the tsunami happened, we started seeing God working there and really, you know, kind of opening up like almost a new frontier in Japan for missions to happen. But again, because there were no missionaries working there previously, because there was no missions organization that had a strategy in place to reach that area, there were very few long-term missionaries that could go to that area. And we really felt like, well, we're preparing to go as long-term church planting missionaries, and we're not committed fully to a specific place in Japan yet. So we had the freedom to consider changing directions and going up there. And so through a lot of prayer and through, you know, going there and visiting and talking to the pastor that we're working with, we really felt God calling us to that area. So that's where we went 5 years ago to begin preparing for church planting work. And our hope and our prayer was that the ministry would head in that direction, that this, you know, is still very much in a relief work-centered ministry. But our hope was that that would open the door for church planting and for evangelism and discipleship to happen. So we knew that, you know, I would have to learn Japanese, for one, before I could be involved in that kind of work. And so there's going to be some preparation. I wanted to get in some experience working within a Japanese church and get a deeper understanding of the culture and how to interact with people. So we knew there was going to be some buildup. But again, our hope was that as we prepared for a church planting ministry, that God would then be working in those cities to open up that opportunity. So that's what we went 5 years ago. First 2 years was full-time language study. I was studying Japanese at a language school. I was doing about 4 hours of classwork a day and then 4 hours of homework a day for 2 years straight. So it was like going back to college. I wasn't excited about that, but it was a good experience. I got a good basis of Japanese through that. And then for the last 2.5 years, I've been doing an internship at our church in Morioka, where I've gotten a chance to preach a couple times and get involved in a lot of different ministries that the church does. So this is our church. This is the church we've been working with. They have about 70 people, which is on the large size. Average church size in Japan is about 20. So we're one of the larger churches in the prefecture. Japanese tends to be, the society tends to be a little bit more formal than I'm used to in California. So I couldn't, you know, wear my Hawaiian shirt and sandals anymore to church. But, you know, we adapted to the culture a little bit. This is a conservative Baptist church. We really appreciated their ministry and we really enjoyed being a part of that church. We became members there after about a year or two of being there. We joined the church as members and really got to, we really love our pastor there and his family. They're really neat. They have a great heart for ministry and for the lost. So it's very refreshing to get to work with them. And actually, so our pastor, the way we met him, so my wife, as I mentioned, she grew up in Tokyo. She's Japanese. When she was in high school, our current pastor in Japan was a seminary student studying in Tokyo, and he was an intern at her church. And so she knew him from that. She was friends with his family. And so he was the one that when the tsunami hit, we contacted him because we knew he was in the area. And went to go see about working with him. This is at a different church. This is a sister church on the coast. So this church, it was hit by the tsunami. It's about a two-hour drive from where our church in Morioka was. And that church has been through a lot of difficulty. So at their height, maybe 10 years ago or longer, they had maybe 15 people. The church was kind of infiltrated by a cult from Korea, and that caused a split within the church where you had a guy who was part of this cult who came in and kind of gained standing within the church, started leading a Bible study in his home, and then anybody who went to his Bible study, he kind of converted to his cult and eventually took off and started his own separate thing. So that was a big blow to the church. The church was directly impacted by the tsunami. The water went up about 10, 12 feet within the church building. So it was really damaged from that. You had a lot of people that were scattered after that. A lot of the church members that were part of it didn't return to the church. They moved to different parts of Japan. And then about 3 years after the tsunami, the kind of temporary pastor they had resigned, so they didn't have a pastor anymore. So there's only two members left at this church. They have a small building, two members, and no pastor. And so our pastor is technically the overseeing pastor of that church. And so we would go down to this church once a month. And so again, there's only two people in this picture actually members of the church. There's one lady on the far right. She's a staff worker. A Christian staff worker that does relief work in the city. So she attends the church, but she's not officially a member, but she's, you know, there pretty regularly. And then everyone else in that picture came from our church in Morioka. So we bring down some people once a month to attend the prayer meeting, to pray with them, to encourage them. Our pastor does a little Bible study, and then we go back. But this is a very common situation in Japan. Many pastors in Japan have to oversee multiple congregations, and so they'll be doing a lot of driving around, and it tends to be a lot of work. But yeah, that kind of gives you a little bit of insight into some of the challenges that we face over there. It's another picture of our pastor. Again, he's a very friendly, lively guy, and this is him and his wife and one of the church kids that he made cry. He loves doing that. So this is another one of the outreaches that we do, and a good way to meet people and kind of break down some of the barriers is to teach English. So we have an English cafe that the church puts on once a month. And, you know, it's very difficult to get people to consider, like, even stepping foot in a church building. If you think about, like, how often, you know, probably for most of you would have considered attending, like, a Buddhist temple, it's probably similar for Japanese to go to a Christian church. To them, it's a very foreign experience. There's a lot of questions, a lot of things that they don't understand. There's probably some level of suspicion about what goes on in there. And so it's not something that a Japanese would typically do. And so one of the ways that we kind of break down that barrier a little bit is by teaching English. And so we do a monthly English outreach. And this is kind of a neat one because we actually, it's usually attended half from people within the church and then half non-Christians. So not only do people get a chance to interact with the English speakers who are leading the English cafe, they get a chance to interact with actual Japanese Christians and get to see that these are ordinary, normal people that, you know, are not like crazy religious cultists that they kind of, some people wonder about that. So that's been a great way to sort of bridge that relationship gap and get people to kind of come through the door. This is our English cafe group at the end of one of our nights taking a team picture. But yeah, so one of the interesting things that's kind of come out of that, so this past summer we actually, in addition to the monthly English cafe, we had some interns from Texas came out and they helped us put on an English, not like a class, but a tutoring program. So we did a six-week tutoring program where people could sign up to meet with a native English speaker, and through that they would come and practice English. And we used a curriculum from the Jesus film, if any of you are familiar with that. They actually put out an English curriculum, so you would show portions of the Jesus film and then kind of talk about a little bit in English. And through that, you know, hopefully kind of get a chance to have some conversations. But that was a good outreach for the church. We had a lot of new people that we'd never had any contact with before. And one of the ladies that, you know, she was a retired lady who came to practice English. She was pretty good with English. So she attended the six-week course. I remember I wasn't teaching her specific class. One of the interns was, but she spoke very loudly, and I was kind of sitting downstairs while their class was going on, and I heard her talking very loudly about, she's like, oh, this is like a Bible thing, right? It's like, oh, I kind of thought it might be, and I was like a little nervous, like, oh, maybe she was angry about kind of getting tricked into, you know, she came to speak English, but it turned out she was actually interested in the Bible, and she was kind of actually glad that we were using the Bible, and that was one of the reasons she specifically was looking for a class in a church. So that was kind of interesting. So she attended through the six-week course. After that, you know, she started coming to the monthly English cafes as well, and we get to see her there, and we'd always have a testimony time at the English cafe, and eventually someone from the English cafe invited her to come to the Sunday service as well. And one of the first times she came to the Sunday service, I remember our pastor was preaching through the book of Genesis at the time. And the Sunday that she picked to just show up was the covenant of circumcision, which is a very awkward topic to talk about, especially in Japan, because they don't widely practice that there. And so to be talking about that in church and our pastor kind of doing the sermon on that, I was like, oh, I wonder what she's thinking about all this. But our pastor made just one kind of small subpoint of his sermon was about the difficulty of Abraham obeying God in this covenant, and how it was something that was a difficult thing to do. And he brought that into the New Testament, comparing it to some of the commands that Jesus gives to his church and to Christians. And he talked about how we're commanded as Christians to love even our enemies. It's just a small side point in his sermon, I almost didn't even notice it. But he got a call in the middle of the week from that lady, and she said she was really touched by the sermon that she heard. And she heard, you know, she felt like, you know, she wanted to be able to have that kind of love even towards her enemies and to people that she didn't get along with. And she couldn't do that on her own. And so because of that, she wanted to become a Christian. Which in Japan, typically that means she wants to start studying to learn what Christianity is so that she can then prepare and have a good understanding with it, and then eventually join the church and be baptized. So she's on that path now. She's been meeting with our pastor, going through kind of a discipleship Bible study. And again, this is very common for Japanese when they come to Christ. It's usually very cautiously. And so often they will go through a very long discipleship period before they become a Christian, as they really start to understand the gospel and Christianity. And, you know, their worldview is so different from Western worldview. They don't have any sort of a basis even in like a single God or a creator God. Their worldview is very animistic. They believe in millions of gods. And most people will tell you that they don't actually believe that, that it's just kind of a tradition. But that's like, if you say God, that's what they think. They think like God with a little g. It's almost feels like, you know, going back to, you know, the times in the Bible when Paul's talking in Athens and seeing all of these, you know, altars and things. It's almost more closer to that worldview than to like a Western American worldview. And so there's a lot of explanation that has to happen. People have a lot of questions, a lot of misunderstandings. So they really do need that time and value that time of discipleship. But that was one of the things that was encouraging to see that. One other story. So this is a young man at our church that I got to do a discipleship Bible study with right before we left. We went through the book of Romans and got to talk about that. I think I almost got more of it out of him because it was a good chance for me to practice my Japanese. But he was very gracious to put up with me and go through it, and he really appreciated it too. He was really interested in the book of Romans and really hungry to learn. He's a new believer at our church. He was just baptized this past summer, but he has a really unique testimony. So he showed up at our church completely uninvited. He didn't know anybody at the church. We'd never seen him before. He just, you know, came through the door one Sunday. Which never happens, unless you're a Christian. So sometimes Christians will find out, oh, they'll be looking for a church in the area, they're new, and they'll show up. And that happens a lot. But he was, I mean, and he was a Christian, but he had never been to church before anywhere else. And so we started trying to find out where he came from, and we asked him kind of, so how'd you find out? And he explained that he had been kind of suffering from a lot of anxiety and depression, and because of that, he very rarely would leave the house. He would just stay in his room and be on his computer all day. But as he was on his computer, he was browsing on YouTube, he found a Christian pastor that was uploading these messages to YouTube. And he started getting really interested in the messages that were being uploaded. And eventually the pastor kind of gave an altar call on YouTube and said, you know, if you want to become a Christian, say this prayer and, you know, trust in Christ for your salvation. And so he did. He was sitting in his room by himself. He said the prayer and he kept watching the videos. And a couple weeks later, the pastor said, by the way, if there's anybody out there who did become a Christian watching these videos, you really need to find a local church and get connected. And so he did. He looks up on the internet to try and find local churches in his area, and he came walking into our church. And again, you know, he was going through like anxiety and depression, and so he was really nervous doing that. Again, this is like a very foreign thing. We rarely see, you know, Japanese kind of have that courage to just walk into a church uninvited like that. But he did. And he started attending our church faithfully every single week and getting more involved. And we started to see, you know, really the Spirit working in his life. And we saw him, you know, being to overcome some of that anxiety and really enjoying the fellowship. And he really loved the kids at the church and playing with them. And, yeah, so it's just such a joy to see him, you know, go through all that and eventually be baptized. And he's continuing to grow in his faith. So, yeah, it's really encouraging to see God working in those ways in Japan, because I think a lot of people can have a very pessimistic outlook about the ministry because it does often take so long for people to come to Christ. But then at the same time, we see the Spirit working in these really unique ways that, you know, we had no idea that this was even out there, a possibility. There was this other pastor out there uploading YouTube sermons, and yet here we have this new believer that, you know, God had saved and brought to our church and brought into our fellowship, and he's been a part of it. Yeah, for the last year and a half or so, he's been going there. So that's kind of a little bit about the work that we've been doing there. How long does this usually go?
If it's me, I end at 9:30. If it's Tim or Troy, they end at 9:45.
Oh, perfect. Thank you, Tim. So I'm not Jason, so that means I've got at least 20 minutes left. No, I'm wrapping up. So, okay, so let's go ahead and move in. Okay. So let me talk a little bit about kind of what we're doing next. So we've been in that church for the last 5 years, serving there. Again, we're now getting ready to move down to one of the coastal cities to be involved in a church plant. So again, it was like when we went there 5 years ago, there was very little church planting happening. And I had even, you know, floated the idea to our church, like if they were considering doing any of that. And they had told me, no, they didn't have any plan to do church planting. They felt like they had kind of too much going on and they didn't know if they had the resources to do it, which is a little bit disheartening because, again, they're one of the largest churches in the area. And so it almost felt like, well, if you guys don't have the resources to do church planting, then, you know, then none of the Japanese churches do. And, you know, how is this ever going to start reproducing and how are we ever going to begin seeing fruit? But we kind of continued to trust God and we learned a little bit more about the history of that area. So our church had actually been involved in church planting about 20 years earlier. And so our church had, and a couple of other conservative Baptist churches in the area, had partnered with some missionaries. And at one time, they had up to 9 different church plants going on within our prefecture. And after many years of laboring, all but one of them closed down. So they had a very difficult experience in their previous experience with church planting. And the one church that's still there is that one that's on the coast that only has 2 members left and no pastor. So that's you know, they almost feel like, you know, felt like, well, if we do start another church, you know, maybe it'll just wind up like this other church that's kind of just barely hanging on. And it takes a lot of resources just to kind of keep that church going, much less starting a new one to do that. So they were kind of very hesitant because of that. But it was, again, it was interesting to see their hearts kind of grow for outreach as they got more involved in sending teams down to the coast. And then and another part of that was that God did bring missionaries to work with their church. And that was the first time they'd been working with missionaries in, again, probably 20, 30 years. And it's sort of unfortunate, but one of the things that tends to be prevalent in Japanese churches is they have this mentality that the pastor is the professional, and so he is the only one who's qualified to do any kind of ministry work. So pastors are extremely overburdened in Japan. And so our church wound up having 2 or 3 missionary families began attending our church. And what seemed to start to happen was because we were missionaries and we were professionals, we got sort of invited to, you know, help support the ministry of the church, which began to alleviate some of the pressure from our pastor a little bit and really give him, I think, a better idea of, you know, we really need lay people to be filling these roles. And so he's trying to figure out how to do that because culturally it's very difficult to get people to be willing to serve in those roles. But he's really starting to see the benefit of having more people than just him, you know, doing all the ministry of the church. So that's exciting to see because I think that's one of the major changes that needs to happen within the Japanese church for the gospel to begin spreading out. But in part because of that cooperation with missionaries, I think that the church felt more comfortable with the idea of now partnering to do church planting. And so about a year ago, they began considering this plan to do a church plant in one of these coastal cities. So our church was partnering with a missionary from the UK. She was doing a music ministry, and so she would play grand harp. And her main ministry was she'd travel around Japan. She would give these harp concerts. She would share her testimony. And she would do it at churches, so people at the churches would then invite, you know, people from around the neighborhood to come to the harp concert. And so that was her main ministry. But she was living in the city of Miyako, where we're going, and that city had, while she was living in the city, she was doing relief work, and she was doing a lot of, you know, kind of building relationships with different ladies within the town, and, you know, going to different temporary housings and kind of doing small tea times and that kind of thing. And she began to build these relationships. She felt like she wanted to invite these ladies to a church, but there wasn't a church that she could invite them to. So she asked our church to consider planting a church. And again, you know, I talked to them a few years earlier and they were not open to that at all. But at this point, you know, their heart had kind of shifted a little bit and they actually said, well, we'll pray about it. We'll think about it. We'll consider it. And so they did. They started going through that process and they kind of made a pretty firm commitment to it about a year ago. And then about a month ago, they formally approved it. They actually went through with the congregational vote and everything. And it was a unanimous decision to go forward. So they're going forward with the church plant in the city. And that's what. So when we go back, we're going to be going to continue working with the same church, but we're going to move down to the city to be a part of the church planting team there and, yeah, begin to do a church plant. And, it's really exciting to see that because
you know, again, it was like, you know, 20, 30 years was the last kind of major church planting push in this area. And yet after the tsunami, like almost every single city in our prefecture that was hit by the tsunami has some new church planting effort taking place in it. So it's been really exciting to see God really work through that tragedy and begin to open up these doors. And so we're excited to kind of see what's going to happen next. I mean, overall, it's hard to classify with Japan because everything tends to move so slowly. For us, it feels like things are just like wide open and doing amazing. But the reality is that we're not seeing like large portions of people or even many people actually coming to faith. But again, these are communities that wouldn't even talk to Christians before, and now they're very open to building relationships and talking to Christians. So we kind of were expecting this to take a long time to happen. But we're very encouraged by that change of heart that seems to be happening, that shift that's happening in that community. So just a little bit about that town. So this is a view on a bridge that's going over kind of a gorge that has the ocean on one side. So this is looking out at the ocean. And then if you look at the other side of the bridge, this is looking at the town. And you can kind of see in there how that's just like a perfect channel for water to go through. That's where the tsunami went right through that area, right where the town was. And that main area in the middle is a large portion of the town that was just completely devastated. The water just went right through there and knocked everything over. So this is back standing down in that area. And just kind of an interesting thing that you can see here. So in the foreground, you see an empty lot. And that's where there used to be a house. That's a for sale sign on the fence. So the person who used to live there, they're not planning to come back. They're selling their empty lot, and they're not going to be rebuilding. Right behind it, you can see a house that was rebuilt since the tsunami because this whole area was nothing. There was nothing left here. So any buildings that are on this low area have been rebuilt in the last 7 years. So that's someone that they were previously living in that area, and now they've rebuilt their home, and they've moved back to that same spot. A little bit further back, you can see a bigger building, kind of apartment building with a blue roof. That's a government apartment building that the government has built for survivors who can't afford or don't have the option of going back to their previous location. So you have some people that are beginning to move in there. And then a little bit further back, way in the background, you can see kind of up on the hill, there's older houses, and they were on high enough elevation that they weren't hit by the tsunami. And so again, these are previously, before the tsunami, you had these communities that were generations old. You had the same people living in the same house as their parents for generations. So they had very close relationships with their neighbors. And again, that's where that whole tight-knitness came in that was so difficult to kind of break into. It was almost like if you moved to the town 30 years ago, you were still like an outsider, like because your parents weren't from here. So you're kind of, there's still a little bit of distrust there. That attitude has largely been challenged and broken down because the communities have been so devastated and because there's been so many people coming in to help them. And so they're in this kind of phase of community rebuilding right now, like both literally and figuratively, like in the sense that they're literally rebuilding the buildings of the community. But then also, because you have people in different situations and coming from different backgrounds, they're all struggling with different things and trying to sort of rebuild that sense of community. So you have people that are moving into this area from other parts, and now they don't know the neighbors there, and they feel like they're kind of outsiders in this place, and so they're trying to make those connections. You have people that, you know, that lost everything in the tsunami and they're still dealing with that grief and they've moved back and rebuilt their house in that area. And then you have people that survived it and they watched all that happen and they had this sense of guilt, like, you know, why were we okay when, you know, our friends and neighbors lost everything, and, you know, some of them even died and passed away. And so now it's kind of awkward for them when they see their neighbors coming back and struggling with all that, and they feel like, you know, they're not struggling the same way. So there's a lot of these relationships that are kind of strained and in sort of this awkward seeking phase. And our hope is that if we can go in now at that point and plant a church in that community, the church will be a part of helping that community connect itself, that it will grow alongside the community and begin to be like a lasting presence for Christ and for ministry in that area for years to come. And that's really our goal, and that's one of the reasons we're excited about going to this town, because there's a lot of opportunities for relationships right now, even within the city government. So the missionary that we're working with who's been living there, she actually went to the city government and said, you know, our church is going to be sending some new people to come down and work in the city. Is there things that we can help out with? And they had a long list of things that they're like, yeah, that'd be great. You know, we've got all these things that we could use people to help with different events and things like that. So even working with the government, there's opportunities where we can go in now and we can get to meet people and to share with people. And again, our hope is that through that, we'll be able to build those relationships and have those opportunities to share the gospel, to see people discipled and evangelized. And so we're kind of looking at it like, you know, we'll be going back for a 2-year term when we go back in July. And our hope is that during that 2-year time, we'll really get to build those relationships. We'll get to bring together kind of a core group of believers and new believers in that city. And then from that, prepare to launch like a public worship service and actually start having a church meeting within the city. But that's, again, it's still very much in the early planning phases, and there's a lot of that sort of pre-work that needs to be done. We kind of have to take a long-term view of things in Japan. But we're really encouraged and excited to see the ways that God's been working in there before. I think I still have 10 minutes, so. Let me open up for questions, if there's any quick questions anybody has, but that's mostly what, one other thing. So if you heard this and you're very interested and you want to learn more and keep up, we are really in need of people to be praying for us. Japan has had 150 years of Protestant missions in the country, and there's been almost zero progress. It's an incredibly difficult place to be, and you know, it's interesting. We're talking with some friends who came over last night and things, but I think there's almost one good thing out of that, and that's that, you know, we have absolutely no hope of doing this in our own power. Like, that's completely 100% obvious. If this was a problem that could have been solved by human effort, there's been 150 years of missionaries striving and serving and, you know, trying to break through to this culture with very little success. And so we know very clearly that it has to be a work of the Spirit, that we have to have, the Spirit coming in and working in people's hearts, opening people's hearts and softening that. And so a big part of what we're doing here is we're trying to raise up people to really fervently pray for this area in this part of Japan. So in line with that, we send out a prayer update by email about once a month. And if you're interested in getting that, there's a sign-up sheet in the back of the room. I'd love for you to just put your name and email address on there, and we'll start keeping you up to that. We are also raising support, so if you are interested in getting more involved by partnering financially, you can do that on our website. And we have some brochures in the back that has more information about the church plant and a prayer card, so if you want to grab one of those and stick us on your refrigerator, we love being on people's refrigerators. Please do that as well. So with that said, I'll open up for questions for a few minutes until Jason kicks me off. Yes. Yeah, I think, first about the question about adoption, is not commonly practiced in Japan. Orphans are kind of looked down on, so it's very difficult if you are an orphan. In fact, we have some friends that are serving another part of Japan, but one of their ministries is that they work with, it's a crisis pregnancy ministry. So people who are pregnant that don't want to be, they give them a place to live where they can kind of not have that shame of, you know, being pregnant outside of marriage and have their baby, and then they try and find a adoption place for them. And they've actually adopted from that. And I've known missionaries that have adopted Japanese. But it's not very common for Japanese to adopt someone unless, historically it was there would be a thing where, you know, if you didn't have a son and you needed a son to pass down the family business, then you would look for, a boy to adopt. But it's not as accepted as it is here in the States. So that's a social issue. That's a tough one. I don't know specifically about how that impacts with people's understanding of the gospel. I haven't seen that exact interaction, but there are a lot of things like that where I think we have a lot of, Western culture has a lot of Christianity underneath the surface of it. And so even if people don't, believe or understand anything about Christianity, their worldview has been very shaped by it. And so a lot of, you know, the metaphors and things that we use connect very easily with that. And we see, you know, maybe some more difficulties sometimes when it comes to that in finding ways to explain the gospel in a way that people do grasp and understand. Another one kind of in line with that is that right now in Japanese society, fathers are very absent. They work very long hours. They very rarely see their families. And kind of the understanding and the view is that the way that the father loves his family is by providing financially. And that's about it. So they throw everything into that. And they don't really give any sort of emotional support to the family or the children. They don't have a lot of relationship or anything to like really train their kids. And that tends to cause a lot of family issues. And so a lot of kids don't have good relationships with their fathers. So that can be a struggle when we talk about God as our father. And the hope, obviously, is that, you know, the Christian community can model what true fatherhood should look like. And then from that, demonstrate, you know, how that, you know, shows off the glory of God our Father and the relationship that we have with them. But that's where I think it's important for the church to really be, you know, living up with that, even from an evangelistic standpoint, because so much of what people understand about the gospel, it comes not from what they hear, but from what they see in the lives of Christians. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
If you were to get six Christians, then what would you do for a building?
Right. We're still kind of working through those. Probably initially, when we get to the meeting point, it'll likely start in people's homes. The house church mentality is not very common in Japan, so people. That would be even more foreign than having a church building that they would go to. So there's, you know, there may be some cultural barriers there. But then we have seen some Christians begin to go into a house church ministry and see some success. So we're kind of open to that, but we're not sure yet. It sort of depends on how things go. When we initially get there, yeah, we have a house probably lined up, and our hope is to kind of do like an English cafe ministry out of there. We plan on sending our children to the local schools, and through that to get involved in schools and build relationships with the families and the other kids there. My wife has been involved in doing like outreaches for mothers of young children and just kind of inviting them to have a place where they can bring their kids together that aren't in preschool yet, and the kids can play together, build relationships through that. So we have a number of ideas, and then additionally, the relief work is still kind of ongoing in that community outreach phase. We've got some ideas for where to start. A lot of what we want to do, though, is we really want to understand the culture of that particular city, because it is, you know, it is even a different city, different culture than, you know, the city we've been in. We've been in a larger city, much more like people transferring from other parts of Japan, kind of moving through. There's a college in that city, so there's a lot of different things that the city that we're going to is different from. So the city we're going to tends to be an older population. There's not like a college nearby. A lot of fishing industry, a little bit of tourism. So different city culture than we're from before. So we really want to try and understand how we can connect with people there and how we can connect them with the gospel. We have some ideas for how we'll start that. But again, part of that is why we have this kind of 2-year period where we're sort of easing into it and really trying to sense how we can bridge those gaps. We've been here since Thanksgiving. Yeah, so typically we go for 2 years, we come back here for 6 months. It's kind of our term cycle. Yes?
Is your wife's parents Christian?
They are, yeah. So actually, yeah, my wife, her father was the pastor of the church that I went and worked with on our first trip over there. Yeah, and he's actually... right. Yeah, no, they were very, they had worked with American teams a lot before, so they were comfortable with American people. My mother-in-law really seemed to like me and my brother. Did I mention that my brother married my wife's sister? Sorry, yeah. So we went on a missions trip, and my younger brother was leading the trip. Pastor had two daughters. We wound up marrying the two daughters. Not on the trip, after the trip, later, many years later. But that's where we met, yeah. So they were very welcoming to us. Yes?
Sorry. What is
Yeah, so living in Tokyo is very expensive. Where we are, it's actually not so bad. So that was another blessing. Like, so initially when we were raising support, we had a very large amount to raise because we were planning on going to Tokyo. When we changed and went up to this area, we were able to reduce our support budget by a significant amount. And that was one of the things that played a part in us being able to get over there as soon as we did. But yeah, Tokyo can be very expensive. Housing can be extremely expensive there. So overall, and you say it's great that we're up in the rural area and we love being there. We feel like God is working there and calling us there. But like, just, I don't want to say anything bad about the missionaries who do have to raise lots of support to live in the cities, because there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. There's work that needs to be done everywhere. But yeah, it just kind of depends regionally where you're at. Yeah. Yes.
This is well done.
Well, thanks.
I appreciate this. It's kind of just together what you were saying last night and then what you're saying here. Yeah. So when you say there's two churches in Miyako, is that including the church plant that you...
No, so that's two Protestant churches. Yeah, it's always hard to draw where the line is because there's lots of churches in Japan. We have Protestant churches, we have Catholic churches, Orthodox churches. It's always tough to figure out what the most helpful ones. So there's another Protestant church in the city. I wouldn't classify it as an evangelical church. Their theology is fairly on the liberal side. They're not big on the inerrancy of Scripture, and their outreach is primarily social. They don't have much of a heart for evangelism. They have a heart for the community, but yeah, not much of a heart for the gospel has been my impression of that church. So those are the only two Protestant churches in the city, but then only one of those, I would say, is theologically sound. But then even that one evangelical church that's there, they've had some relationship conflicts and some differences with the pastor, and it seems like that church has moved more into social work since the tsunami, and they've sort of not been as interested in presenting and sharing the gospel, which is one of the reasons why, you know, the missionary that was working there felt like there was a need for a new church, because she had been working with that other evangelical church, but she didn't feel like it was a place to invite people who were interested or considering Christianity. Yeah, that's her in the middle in the red shirt. Yeah. Yeah, her name is Catherine Porter, so she's from the UK.
So how many churches or missionaries under your organization are currently in Japan?
With GEMS, we have about 30, I think, but we're scattered all over the place. GEMS is kind of a unique organization in that they don't themselves have like a particular strategy in Japan. Almost all of their missionaries had a relationship with a church or ministry that needed people to come and work with them. And so they sent them to go do that, which is really neat because I think there's a place for both of them. You know, the larger organizations, they have like an overall church planting strategy, and they'll put their missionaries in there. But there's a lot of small ministries in Japan, small churches that really need people to come and partner with them to work with them. But the larger missions organizations are much less reluctant to do that. They kind of have their own things that they're doing. So GEMS is really unique in that they're great at getting people to where they need to be. And so that was why we were able to go up to this area that didn't have anyone else, any other, you know, big missions agencies working there. You know, we had a church that we could work with. They would receive us. And so Jim sent us out there to work with them.
So a question for you. I'm sure you've kind of wrestled with this. Would it be more effective, instead of doing a church plant, to go to one of those churches that are already there?
Yeah.
And kind of work through those issues to make it a healthy church?
Right.
My question, I think it has like heightened relevance for Japan in particular because they like roots.
Yeah.
And like a church that's already there, although it's suffering, it's still there, it's already part of the community. So would you say that a new church plant would be more effective than just trying to revitalize?
Potentially, and that's actually, we looked into that. So our first plan was to go and work with that church in Ofunato, the one they showed the picture of that has the two members and no pastor. They weren't comfortable with having a missionary come to be their head pastor. They wanted a Japanese pastor. And so that was, that kind of, we saw that door kind of close. And that oftentimes is the case. So oftentimes even the pre-existing churches, it's very difficult to find a good match And yeah, so that's, again, that's really our heart, is to see the Japanese church grow and be revitalized as a whole. There is a lot of missionaries and missionary thinking that have basically almost given up on the Japanese church, where they feel like, you know, the Japanese church is never going to change, and so we just need to work independently and kind of start over again from scratch. And that, you know, maybe, you know, from the outside, if we can find ways to reach people, that will then have an influence on the Japanese pastors. I tend to be a little bit more hopeful, and I really have a heart for the Japanese indigenous church. I want to see them rise up and be a part of that work. And that was one of the reasons we were so excited to see our church kind of shift in their attitude towards outreach and church planting. But yeah, it is a lot of work to do. Yeah.
Yes, do you have a ballpark figure for how many Christians there are in Japan?
Overall, I don't remember what the number would be. I know that the percentage would be about 0.5%. So the population, I think, is around 130 million. So if there's any math guys out there, 0.5% of 130 million would be about how many Christians there are. Yeah, so somewhere around there. Yeah. All right. Well, I think I've already gone 5 minutes over Tim's time, so better wrap it up there. But yeah, I'll be around the rest of the day, I guess. Potluck and stuff afterwards, I heard, so I'll hang around for that too. If anybody has more questions, feel free to run up. I'd love to talk with you. Love to answer any more questions you have, but thank you so much for letting me share a little bit and, yeah, listen to what's going on in Japan.